We continue now with Youssef Komunyakaa here in Port Townsend at the 29th Annual Port Townsend Writers Conference. Perhaps the brightest light at this year's conference, Youssef is a Pulitzer Prize-winning poet who served his country in Vietnam and is professor at Princeton University. Among his books of poetry include Talking Dirty to the Gods and Neon Vernacular, for which he won that aforementioned Pulitzer in 1994. One of your most inspiring accomplishments, for me anyway, is your co-editing job of the Jazz Poetry Anthology on Indiana University Press. And I showed you the number of times I've read that on the Jazz Station. And so I know the book pretty well and have come to know some poets for the first time through their work in there. Can you tell us about how that project came to be?
Well, I had started collecting jazz-influenced poems around 1980, and I sort of placed the project aside and came back to that project once when I came to Indiana and had taken a leave, gone to Australia, returned, and had a student by the name of Sasha Feinstein, and we started talking about jazz-influenced poetry again. And I said, well, I have this idea for an anthology, and I think that was in 1987. And initially, I thought it would just be maybe 50 or 60 voices. Ended up 132 voices.
One of those projects that just doesn't stop.
Right, that's right.
It just gets a life of its own.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about the combination of jazz and poetry. Langston Hughes, perhaps, was the first poet we know of to perform with jazz accompaniment and certainly to be influenced by the blues and jazz. Kenneth Rexroth, another. Can you tell us about those and others?
Well, Langston Hughes, I think of, is mainly influenced by the blues. It's interesting because he comes out of the Midwest, out of Missouri, Joplin, Missouri. And someone such as Kenneth Rexroth comes out of the Midwest as well, South Bend, Indiana. Thinking about the Midwest, a lot of those poets coming out of the Midwest are influenced by the music for the simple reason the music is in the landscape. My feeling is that a lot of the poets were writing jazz-influenced portraits, really portraits of the musicians. And there are some great ones. One of the early poems that I came in, well, early poets that I came in contact with, writing about jazz, would have been a young poet at the time when I met him in 1974, William Matthews. I was quite taken with his poems because I'd first seen some of the jazz-related poems of his in Porterson magazine, and I think there's a poem entitled Art Tatum, another poem, Coleman Hawkins. And the poems were so pared down, spare, that they sort of rose almost out of themselves with a certain kind of voice and presence that just made me sort of stopped in my tracks.
Yeah, he has a few in the first edition of the Jazz Poetry Anthology. Yeah. A few that I've read on the air, Coleman Hawkins, Listening to Lester Young, Unrelenting Flood. That's the Art Tatum reference.
Yeah.
And, you know, you talk about jazz portraits. There's a poet who, in fact, is included in one of the two anthologies, Wanda Coleman. Yeah. And she says, there are two kinds of jazz poems, those that honor jazz and those that emulate jazz. Now, your thoughts at the Wednesday morning lecture would seem to be in opposition to that. You talked about poetry that tries to mimic jazz. You're not interested in, I think.
Right.
Can you elaborate on that?
Well, my feeling is that the musicians are so great at what they do, it's almost nonsensical for the poet to get up and attempt to create jazz through language. So I'm more interested in the poems that honor the musicians, honor the music.
Yeah. Hmm. And, you know, that notion of Thelonious Monk and, you know, the silences, the angular sorts of melodies, the ugly beauty of his music, to use one of his titles, to somehow get that into writing is not worth the effort, you think?
It's worth the effort, yes. For some reason, Monk, I've called a technician of silence, and I definitely believe that. And it's the first time thinking about Monk and his use of silence as part of the musical composition, I realize for the first time that silence is a part of poetry as well. It really made me start thinking about it. And it has a lot to do with where I break a line and the white space, how that is used as well. With some poets, of course, the use of the white space is a lot more pronounced. But silence as part of the text still interests me.
Creates tension.
Yes.
I mentioned Charles Olson's projective verse in the last segment. You know, he talked about when you leave a space as long as the previous word, then you're to pause for that amount of time. So that's almost like using the page not only as a field, but also as a musical score.
Yes,
and and purposely incorporating silence.
Right.
Yeah. And there's another thought that I had about Midwestern poets, the connection of jazz in the Midwest. Miles Davis, of course, coming from the Midwest.
East St. Louis.
Yeah, yes. Alton, Illinois, and then hanging out with the bands and meeting the bands in St. Louis. And T.S. Eliot, also coming from St. Louis. And Victor Hernandez Cruz said in a poem that the energy of St. Louis was just too much for him. He had to go to England. So couldn't deal with that sort of jazz.
Well, it's interesting because there's a certain kind of individuality coming out of the Midwest. Usually we think of the West Coast or the East Coast. But for some time, I've been thinking about those unique voices. We could go all the way back to Paul Lynch Dunbar coming out of Dayton, Ohio. Very unique voice. I've already mentioned Lanson Hughes coming out of Joplin, Missouri, but Scott Joplin coming out of Missouri as well. Not only that T.S. Eliot come out of St. Louis, William Burroughs, such a unique voice, comes out of St. Louis as well.
Yeah, and Burroughs had a process somewhat like yours, except the end product was a little bit different. The process itself was different, the collage notion, getting all the material in front of you and then just almost pulling it out of a hat like a Dada poem. You have a few jazz poems. There are a couple that stand out. February in Sydney is a good one to read. I remember seeing Dexter Gordon at the Jazz Showcase in Chicago and thinking, what a hairy tone on tenor he had back in the late 1970s, early 1980s. Would you care to read that one for us? Talking with Youssef Komunyakaa, he is a chancellor of the American Academy of Poets and professor at Princeton University, author of 12 books of poetry, including Pleasure Dome and Talking Dirty to the Gods.
Is it possible I can switch gears again and read a different poem?
Sure, sure.
See, I just like to surprise myself, right?
And surprise the interviewer while you're at it.
Right. February in Sydney. Dexter Gordon's tenor sax plays April in Paris inside my head all the way back on the bus from Double Bay round midnight, the 50s. Cool cobblestone streets resound, footsteps of bebop musicians with whiskey-laced voices from a boundless dream in French. Bud, Prez, Webster, and the Hawk, their names run together riffs, painful gods jive taught through bloodstained reeds and shiny brass where music is an anesthetic. Unreadable faces from the human void float like toned pages across the bus windows. An old anger drips into my throat, and I try thinking something good, letting the precious bad settle to the salty bottom. Another scene keeps repeating itself. I emerge from the dark theater, passing a woman who grabs her red purse and hugs it to her like a heart attack. Tremolo, Dexter comes back to rest behind my eyelids. A loneliness lingers like a silver needle under my black skin as I try to feel how it is to scream for help through a horn.